Hello and welcome to episode 155 of the Final Siren podcast. I'm your host, Peter Williams, and I'm back with Michael Alvaro to chat all things talent pathway football. Michael, how's things?
Not too bad, mate. Thanks for asking. Happy to be back. And obviously there's a little bit going on despite no talent league action, I guess, in our home state of Victoria. So, we'll get stuck into a pretty big episode, I think.
Absolutely. You've got plenty of, discussion points. It'll be a little bit different compared to most episodes where we're discussing a lot of action from the weekend, but we will have a look at a few different topics that a lot of people bring up. So before we really get stuck in, though, let's address the state of the 2023 draft class, because obviously there's been a bit of discussion in years gone by, and at the end of each year, a lot of people discuss the following year's draft, and it's always sort of talked about in a really good light, and then we sort of see them come out and they either, you know, decrease or increase their kind of, draft ability as a crop. So how have you sort of seen it to this point?
Probably hasn't been spectacular, has it? I mean, that's not to sort of put the kids down, but, you know, I always remember speaking to Kinnear Beetson last year, and you can check out that chat on YouTube if you want to after this one for all your listeners. But, he sort of described the following year's draft class every year as, you know, the presents wrapped nicely under a tree. And that's exactly what this draft class was, dubbed by some as a potential super draft, and probably hasn't panned out that way. I think, like most years, the top end's really exciting and you've got some genuine star power in that sort of top 10 to 12 to 15. And, you know, look no further than Harley Reid, the guy who's leading the charge. But I think in terms of depth, we even saw it last year, it drops off pretty steeply at a certain stage. And there's probably not the midfield depth that that some other drafts do have. But, you know, on the flip side, there's some pretty exciting tools who are coming into a good range. So there's still some promise there. It's just, again, about depth and maybe some promise that hasn't quite been delivered on, but there's, I mean, so long in the season left and you know, the big games, the champs games left to play, so plenty of time for these kids to turn things around and I guess deliver on the promise that they showed as bottom ages.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got plenty of footy left in the year. We're only in May. Still the champs to come, as lot as finals and things like that to come along. So plenty to look forward to. So we're going to have a look at potentially where we're at in terms of the pathway year. Obviously, we're through that first block that's been completed. As you mentioned, sort of the talent league's now in its bye. It's only got another week off and then they'll return. So whereabouts are we and how have you sort of seen it in terms of perhaps some of the updates, squads and things like that?
Yeah, well, everything's starting to come together now. We've actually seen all the players hit the park, or most of them at least. And I think we've actually had pretty good runs injury-wise. We've had a few coming back this year and not too many, falling away in that sense. So it's been good. As you mentioned, the first block completed in Victoria. So a lot of the players are heading out to school or community football. And then the guys at the top of the trees, you know, like Harley Reid, Zane Dersma, even, you know, Nathan Phillip-Tides, George Stevens, they're playing VFL footy. And so are some overagers, particularly out of the Northern Academies. So a few different opportunities coming up for all the draft prospects at the moment. Of course, a lot have been undergoing representative trials with Country and Metro. Also the Young Guns games, which another one's happening this weekend, the AFL Academy games happening for the second time as well. So plenty of exciting, I guess, fixtures and showcases ahead of representative football. Obviously, South and Western Australia, I guess, are ahead of the curve in that sense because their under 18 squads have dropped. So there's some pending changes to those, but we've got a good idea of how those states at least are going to stack up at the champs. And it's been good to, I guess, see everyone get on the park and really assess over a good period of time how they stack up.
And like we said before, there's plenty to come. And of course, we've always got our eye on the players across the various leagues, the talent league, the champs when they come along, the sample, waffle, etc. We're doing scouting notes each and every week for the competitions, that are most relevant and checking out those games. That's going to be our next sort of topic, if you like. It's sort of been a query that's come in every now and again from, say, people on social media or things like that that might ask the question of how we determine players for our scouting notes, because for a lot of people, they might look at someone who's had a really big game statistically wise and they might not be in there, or perhaps a player that didn't have many statistics or perhaps doesn't have that impact from that perspective, but they've got those draftable traits. So I guess from your perspective, what is it that makes you select the players you do for the scouting notes?
Yeah, I mean, there's no sort of short answer to this because there's so many variables, and you, Pete, might be able to provide some insight as well, given you do the same thing. Yeah, it's a difficult process. Obviously, we watch a whole lot of football each week, mostly live, but also, you know, because we're based in Victoria, we can't always, you know, head out for, you know, weekend trips to WA and SA. So there's plenty of football to watch. I think in the early stages of Rookie Me Central, or Draft Central as it was, a lot of the focus was around sort of player welfare, because as a website, we had a lot of volunteer writers who perhaps weren't as fixated on the pathway and that area of football, and perhaps didn't have, I guess, all the sort of knowledge that someone who works in it full time would. So that's not to say that, you know, me and you are absolute experts and know everything, and you know, we've got the only one right opinion. You know, that's not the case. But I think, you know, we were quite careful not to sort of distance too far from the kids who have been recognised by state systems and by recruiters as the ones to watch. So, you know, now we get to watch them through the 16s and 17s pathway. So we get a good idea of which kids are going to be good in their 18th year. That always obviously doesn't pan out that way, but I think that you can get a good idea of which players to identify before you've watched a game, and coming into seasons, who's going to be the ones to note down. But obviously after they've actually played, you know, with the talent league, you don't even get live stats. So it's not like we're taking notes with live stats and saying, okay, these are the players who are playing well because they've had this amount of touches. Mm. You know, we're purely making notes on what we're seeing. And again, obviously it comes back to opinion. We've all got different biases in terms of what we like to watch. So there's all these factors that come into it. You know, we don't take stock into coaches' votes and things like that. Obviously, as I said, the stats, it's really just based on draftable traits, repeatable skills, and just players who do something that catch the eye. That's really all it is. And, you know, if it seems like there are favourites, that is, again, arcing back to playing it safe and, you know, just trying to focus on the kids that are those, in quotation marks, draftables. So it's, you know, and when players are overlooked, it's probably more so to do with perhaps some deficiencies, and then, again, just playing safe and trying to get another couple looks at those players to determine, okay, they are going to be in the frame, they are going to be, you know, representative players, or you know, in that draft frame that recruiters might look at as well. So, yeah, I think to sum it up, we've sort of gone past just riding on the players who, you know, are your 30 disposal accumulators or big goal kickers, because, you know, we're trying to narrow in on that draft focus. And it might seem harsh on a lot of players who have had good starts to the season, you know, that might miss out on notes every week, but that's where we're at. I hope that some people have a bit of a different understanding on our perspective on that. But I mean, from your perspective, Pete, like, is there anything else that you sort of look for week in, week out that determines your notes?
Yeah, like for me, everyone's got a different process for taking notes. For me, even though, you know, you see the players week in, week out, you know who a lot of them are, or certainly the better players, even by just looking at them, their number, etc. I like to go in almost with a blank sheet kind of thing and try not to have those biases and just look at the ones that perhaps stand out for me in the day. Now, clearly there's going to be players that I want to keep an eye on just purely for my own thoughts and rankings and things like that, that I can go, yeah, I want to make note of how this player goes, good, bad, or otherwise. And it could be a player who is very draftable and they don't have a good game, they don't get in the notes, but I've got notes there because I like to take the notes that are not just positive but also critical. Now, obviously, they're not going to necessarily get in any notes anywhere. Like, it's not going to be public, but it's just for reference, because if I say a certain player, I really would have liked to have seen them cleaner at ground level, and they might have only had like 8 touches or something, so they're not getting in the notes, like they weren't really impactful. But then down the track, I have a look and they've had 3 or 4 games where they've been really good at that, then potentially that's a note that I go, well, they improved throughout the season, and vice versa. Or, well, perhaps if I say this player had a really good game early in the season and it's the other way around where they've had a few quiet ones, and you can go, oh, well, maybe that was an outlier. So I think for me, early in the season, it's about finding out what the outliers are and what the consistency is, because we're going to see that. I remember when I first started, which is a long time ago now, I think over a decade, like you go to the first game and you see a guy dominate and you're like, wow, this kid's the best ever player I've seen. Like, this is amazing. He's pick one. I remember, I can't even remember who it was, but I remember, I think they were Bendigo Pioneers, and I remember he just dominated. And I thought, oh, wow, this is the pick one player. And it turned out that was his best game of his career and he never had one like it. So it's been wary of that, going, you know, this kid looked really, really good, but then you're like, is that the norm or is this an outlier? And I think that's what you get over time. So you are a bit cautious early in the season. It's a little less as time's gone on, because we have seen them at junior level, or, you know, through 16s, 17s, et cetera, et cetera. I think for it's more a case of those who are coming into the system for the first time. They might be overages or they might be first-time top ages. So you're kind of keeping an eye out going, yeah, they've got some talent there and things like that. And again, that's where you also bring in opinions of others. As like, obviously, we brainstorm with our other writers who obviously contribute quite a bit. And then it's also talking to other people, like, you know, whether it's scouts, recruiters, talent agents, et cetera, coaches, talent managers, like just to get a bit of an idea going, hey, I like that player on the weekend. What do you think about him? And you can have some honest conversations that don't necessarily ever see the light of day, but there's a lot of work going into the background. So I think that's the other thing that I'd quickly raise, would be the fact that there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes in terms of discussions and things like that, that perhaps the public or the readers don't always see. So there might be reasons behind why certain players aren't in, or perhaps why other players are. So I think that's something just to keep in mind, for me anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and just to sort of touch on a couple of things there, there's definitely, as you allude to, a lot left on the cutting room floor. So I'm the same as you, where I'll have so many notes, but, you know, a lot of it doesn't get seen. But then it's more so just for me, when I go back on those notes for draft profiles and things like that, or just to see, you know, if a player's played well again, or shown a certain trait that I can double check that. So, there is a lot that goes into it. Like, it is pretty hard work narrowing down to just a few every game, and with, you know, like 10 games a week. So it's, it's not an easy task, but yeah, so many factors that go into it. It's a bit of a headache at times, but I hope people can, I guess, appreciate at least the work that goes into it, and the fact that, yeah, it's just our thoughts and opinion at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the main thing to remember. It is just opinion, but it is more backed up, because it's not just we do make sure when it comes to sort of our content and things like that, there is substance to it. Obviously, in the long term, if you're looking at draftables and say even power rankings or things like that, you're never going to get it 100% right. We've seen recruiters, like how many players in a draft get selected that don't end up making it, or players that are picked up later in their careers that suddenly make it. Like, everyone's human, but certainly we're catching a lot of games, and hopefully that gives a bit of an insight into those player notes, because we do get a lot of questions about them. And again, if you're not in notes at one stage, there might be a stage where they pop up, they have a really good run of form, suddenly they come up and they start going in. We've seen that happen plenty of times over the years, that players go from pretty much obscurity to making rep teams and things like that, because they've had some great form. So but I think that pretty much covers it. So we're going to move on to the next sort of query, which is when the next power rankings will drop. And I think you've got a bit of an exclusive.
Yeah, I mean, look, kind of. I've got a good idea of my own top sort of 20 to 25. So they're coming at the end of the month. It'll be before the start of June. probably last week in May. Should be a nice new shiny look to him as well. So looking forward to that. But yeah, I think I've pretty much sort of nailed down my order. It's changing only a little bit from week to week now. So yeah, keen for it.
Yeah, no, and of course, without spoiling anything really, sort of, I mean, we pretty much know who the number one's going to be, let's be honest. But just give us a few, a bit of a brief overview into perhaps a couple of players and or the trends of what that top 20, 25 might look like.
Yeah, so like to the surprise of absolutely bloody nobody who knows anything about anything, Harley Reid's number one. So you can lock that one in. There's going to be, I think, three Vics in the top five. So Harley's obviously one of them. People can probably figure out the rest of the top five, I'd say. I wouldn't think it's too hard a task. And I guess amongst the top 20 or 25, there should be a good amount of tall. So depending on whether it is 20 or 25, it'll be either a half or third, I'd say, a key position prospects. And I think just generally, like, the reason why I haven't, you know, started later and gone, you know, a top 30 first up is because it's a little harder, I think, for to rank those prospects and fit in a few after 25. So that's just how it is at the moment. But yeah, there's still a few who have really sort of rocketed up and are impressing.
Yeah, and that's a great lead in to the next question. So who are some of the players potentially that were outside your top 25 at the start of the season, or particularly when you did your 23 to watch in 2023 at the end of last year, who have potentially now squeezed into that group?
Yeah, so a few of these are also outside of like the AFL Academy group, for example. Like the likes of Joel Frazier, he's sort of come into that top 20 range, I would have thought. A couple of Academy talls like Connor O'Sullivan and Ethan Reid, they're really promising. Great mobility and versatility as well, so especially with O'Sullivan. Jordan Croft's another one, obviously Western Bulldogs' father's son. He's got some exciting traits. Will Brown and Luamon Luau, they're another couple from the Talent League who have impressed. So they'll probably feature around that top 25 for me. It'd be tough to squeeze them all in. But yeah, there's obviously a few who are making way as well.
Yeah, and I guess give us a bit of an idea into some of those names, perhaps that either will be at the bottom end or perhaps have slid out of that group that you initially had.
Yeah, there's like it's kind of a theme. If you look at the names that are on the sheet there, Pete. So I'll read through a few. Obviously, like Riley Hardiman, Nathan Felix Tides, Archie Roberts, they're probably some who haven't quite sort of impressed me as much as they did as bottom ages. Like guys like George Stevens, he had a lot of potential as a 16-year-old or 17-year-old as well. Obviously, he sat out last year. Will Lorenz, he'll be on the fringe there. Will Patton as well. So a lot of them are defenders. Cooper Simpson too, I think he'll probably drop out, even though he's a pretty classy player. So, like, they're not bad players at all, those guys. They're all, I guess, in the conversation, but probably just dropped out of that, you know, real top echelon that I might have had a few of them in coming into the season.
Yeah. And it's always tough, of course, because this changes over time and, you know, it, month to month, they might suddenly improve and bounce back in and whatnot. So it's always tough to work out at this stage, which is why we do start small at top 20 or 25. And then eventually by the end of the year, you know, you're getting up to your 40s and 50s or whatnot. There's representative footy on the horizon too. So obviously we'll be able to get a bit of an idea as to who might step up and who might fall down off that. So speaking of, we were lucky to see quite a few WA prospects over in the Waffle Colts as part of the Super Round. So, Michael, we were out there for a nice triple header, of course. What did you make of it?
It was really good. Obviously, I was quite impressed, you know, with obviously the facilities at Mineral Resources Park. Like that's a pretty cool oval, great viewing spot. You were down on the boundary taking photos and yeah, we got some sun, got a few good days there over in Perth, and yeah, it was good fun. I think the exercise, the sort of idea behind it's really positive for WA prospects as well. Obviously, you get a bunch of recruiters in the stands with eyes on them all together, And with all the talent sort of in that one place before some of them head off to PSA footy and continue to climb the grades into reserves and leagues. So, a really good way for those recruiters to touch base with a lot of the waffle clubs and all the players individually. So I quite enjoyed it. I think that weekend was really good and enlightening. It's always best to see those prospects up close. I think I've got a better idea on how some of those West Australian talents stack up. So, yeah, again, pretty happy with it. I think it's going to be great going forward to have more rounds like that.
And, of course, back on representative footy, of course, we'll break down each of the under-18 squad when they've all dropped, because obviously they've started to come out with SA and WA and whatnot. So there's potentially some mid-season draftees. We know they're having a great bit of banter between those, senior-listed players in those teams as well. So, Michael, who are some of the mid-season draft chances that have impressed you?
Yeah, so obviously, just to clarify on that as well, the WA and SA under 18 squads have dropped. They're also playing a rep game between the state leagues. So, as you mentioned, the banter will be pretty rife between them. And there are a few mid-season chances there, even in the VFL. From, the perspective of the guys I've seen up close, obviously Ryan Marich and Clay Tucker, they've been playing in that Young Gun series and they're right up the top of the tree. Marich is probably one of the favourites to be pick one, obviously courted by a couple of West Australian clubs. Clay Tucker's that developable ruck who a lot of clubs are into. If you're looking for a ready-made ruck, it's probably Sam Naismith out of Port Melbourne in the VFL. There's other prospects over in the Waffle. Jack Buller has played really well as a tall forward for Claremont. You've got Noah Casolini, who's come from pretty much nowhere with North Adelaide in the Sandful. Obviously, a Northern Academy graduate, gave up footy for a year or so and has really sort of burst onto the scene as a forward. Other guys who I've seen up close, obviously Robert Hanson Jr., pretty quick, zippy small forward who likes to break the lines. Guys like Riley Stoddard and Callum Brown could get second opportunities. Kai Owens, the brother of Mitch. So there's plenty of talent knocking about. I don't think it's going to be the most mind-blowing intake, to be honest. But there's going to be some players who either get that second chance or who could go on to take that chance initially. Obviously, guys like Jai Cully, Massimo D'Ambrosio have been success stories recently. So I hope that guys like even like Luke Teal, if he gets a chance, he'd be great to watch at the next level. I don't think there's anyone absolutely breaking down the door to get drafted, but there are those prospects who are, right in the frame, and obviously we'll see that going forward.
Yeah, and of course, from that sort of mid-season draft back to the younger talent, if you like, there's plenty to watch out for over the next couple of weekends, I should say. There's obviously a couple of big games coming up this weekend and then, of course, the Talent League the following weekend. So, Michael, give us a bit of rundown into what people who want to perhaps check out the next generation talent can look forward to.
Yeah, so it's going to be a cool weekend coming up. Saturday, we've got the AFL Academy's second game. They're taking on Carlton VFL at Marvel Stadium, so that'll be pretty much in the evening. I think it's about 4 o'clock as a bit of a curtain raiser for Carlton's next loss of the season. I can say that because I'm a Blues man. Obviously on Sunday, there's the second Young Guns game, this time against Vic Country. So a lot of players are actually sort of having to choose between what where they're going to play. So some are playing school footy. Some are going to be in the AFL Academy game. Some are going to be playing for Vic Country. So in particular, that fixture will obviously be important for the young guns trying to get drafted mid-season, and then for the outsiders on that Vic Country squad who are trying to make the final team. And lastly, of course, as you alluded to, the Talent League comes back on May 19. It'll be the last game for three of the Northern Academies. Off the top of my head, I think it's Sydney, Gold Coast and Brisbane. So they'll play their last games. And then it'll be business as usual for the Talent League going forward.
And the Young Guns game's at Icon Park.
It is,
isn't it? Yeah. So that's just in case anyone goes to Trevor Barker, it's actually at Icon Park because, of course, the Metro one was at Trevor Barker last weekend and the weather generally held off pretty well for that one. So hopefully it's not too bad on the weekend for the game against Vic Country. So that's pretty much all we've got time for, of course, today on the Final Siren podcast. The action rolls on pretty quickly, so make sure you stay tuned to Rookie Me Central for all your latest news and analysis. I've been your host, Peter Williams. Michael, thanks for joining me today.
Pleasure as always, mate. Yeah, keen to get stuck into those power rankings. I'll have my head in my computer for a few days, so yeah, don't talk to me.
Absolutely. That's everyone else. It's not me. But be sure to follow at Rookie Me Central on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. There's plenty of cool content coming out. And make sure you subscribe to us on all your favorite streaming services because we'll always have an episode talking footy. That's all for now. Hopefully you tune in next week.